Hey, this is Steve Rickyberg from Geek Cred, the podcast that gives you the inside scoop on everything geek, over at geekcred.net. And you're listening to episode 36 of Murder at Avedon Hill with P.G. Holyfield.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Murder at Avedon Hill. This is episode 36, and this time we're going to answer some of those questions that have been asked along the way. I want to thank this week's guest voices. As always, we have Rick Stringer doing our chapter intro. The incomparable T. Morris joins us once more as Father Joris. Billy Flynn and the Vicar from Geek Radio Daily return as Blake Weathertop and Head Constable Lewis. Indiana Jim joins us once more as Lord Avedon's oldest son, Richard. My dear wife, Liza, makes another appearance as Lord Avedon's oldest daughter, Karen. And last but certainly not least, we have Matthew Wayne Selznick returning as Gareth Beckwin. For this episode, we're going to have a previously on segment to catch us up on some characters and events that come into play in this chapter. Stay tuned after the chapter for a lengthy news segment and a few Karen line calls. But for now, let's get to it. Enjoy. Previously on Murder at Avedon Hill. You look well.
And you look weathered. Your years in seclusion did you no favors. You still have some brown left on that head, though.
Aramis smiled. I miss you, old friend. Gareth lost his own smile.
Old friend, I died too young to ever become your old friend now, didn't I?
There was writing on the paper. Since it was all on a piece torn from a larger page, some words were missing. I have to meet with H.A. I know what this is about, and I really do not have right now. H.A.
No one in town has the initials H.A., but if this indicates a meeting with someone the evening she died, then this person might be our killer.
Could be initials of some of the townspeople. If I have these columns correct, these might represent payments made to them.
Are you serious?
Look at the numbers next to... Who would that be? Talek? Hemming? They could live off of one of these payments for a year. And there are multiple entries for each of them. If this is accurate, there are some very rich people here in Avedon Hill.
I believed your promises. I had heard the rumors from one of my former masters in Inara. I have seen the ruins of the old walls at Dax, and you taught me exactly what I wanted to hear. I should have seen that you are a giant playing at a man's game.
But I know how to make it work now.
I'm sure you do.
Episode 36 of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Chapter 36. The Schedule Book. The Icon of Iberian, Child of Prophecy.
The dawn of the Third Age marked the end of the great dwarven and elven influence over Cairn. Iberian and Kaelin were tasked with the counting. The balance made it clear that many had escaped death. Whether most hid on Cairn or ventured through the portals they had protected for generations remains unclear. The Return of the Children.
It took several raps on Father Joris's door to elicit a response from the other side. Upon hearing the grunt, Aramis called out to the cleric. Father, it is Aramis Cragan. Please open the door.
Hold your skirts, monk.
It was some time before the cleric finally opened the door. He was dressed in a relatively clean nightshirt. Joris's hair was even more disheveled, and his eyes were even more bloodshot than usual. The cleric's first words confirmed Aramis's observations.
What do you want? Can't a man get a bit of rest?
Apologies, Father. I wanted first of all to make sure you had made it back uninjured. Were you successful tracking Lane Nichols? Father Joris snorted.
Don't give that creature the benefit of a living name, Cragan. I tracked the thing for several leagues to the west, but it is as fast and as cunning as they come. Once she passed the crossroads, I knew I wouldn't be able to catch her on foot. I was thinking of resting up for a day or so, then asking Lord Avedon for a couple of horses. I'm sure he'd give them to me since the librarian's the one that killed his girl. I'll catch it yet.
As Joris spoke, he stepped beyond his doorway into the cold morning air, obviously not about to invite Aramis into his home.
Lane Nichols did not kill Greta Platt.
Joris's chest rumbled with a low growl. Aramis wasn't sure if it was over his continued use of Lane's name or the finality of his statement.
The reason we discovered Lane was a vampire was because of a murder she committed outside of town. She killed a book dealer the same night that Greta was killed. She may be fast, but she could not have committed both murders at the same time.
Joris's eyes moved from side to side. It appeared that he was mulling over this new information.
That is disappointing.
There is more.
Aramis described the murder of Gloria Platt, providing only the details about Gloria's corpse. He did not mention Kel.
The marks were like those on your boy's neck, you say?
Aramis nodded.
Which were the same as the younger Platt. So that is a second vampire.
I am still not sure of that. The marks are so clean.
Bah, I've seen far more vampire bites than you have, Cragan. You've got a snakebite bleeder, is all.
Aramis was unfamiliar with the term. Joris sensed this and explained.
You know how to clean a snakebite, right?
He exposed his forearm and simulated cutting it with a knife.
Small incisions around the bite marks and then you suck out the poison. Some vampires don't like messes, and don't like thinking of themselves as animals. That's why I figured that once you found the librarian, that she had to be the one that killed Greta Platt.
Father Joris paused for a moment.
Of course, that is one other possibility.
He flashed a devilish grin. What is that?
Greta Platt.
What?
Greta has risen from the dead and is a vampire herself. You'd best check her coffin. If she's missing...
Joris let his statement hang in the air. Aramis found it hard to grasp that the priest had not heard that Greta's corpse had disappeared from its coffin. Still, Aramis confirmed that part of his theory.
Her corpse has been missing for at least 3 days now.
Joris huffed.
I'd have taken care of her when she rose from the grave, only she wasn't buried in the town cemetery. The Platts are all in some underground mausoleum, but I've never had the pleasure.
Joris laughed, pointing a finger at the monk's chest.
Secrets. Keep them close, Cragan. I need to sleep. I guess I shouldn't leave Avedon Hill quite yet. The librarian can wait.
There is one more thing, Father Joris.
Joris had started to turn his back on Aramis.
what?
Talik Bor was killed late last night by the moon beast I told you about the other day. It was in a cave outside of town. Aaron and I arrived on the scene and were too late to save Talik, but the moon beast is now dead.
Good. It was a shifter?
Yes, and before it turned, Rondella stated one reason it was here was to kill you.
Me? What did it say?
I can only assume it was you. It said it was here for the hunter.
Rondellus, you say?
Yes, Rondellus Marks. He ran a carnival based out of Western Inara.
Inara. I've killed several moon beasts during my time as a hunter of Arjun. Must have killed the beast's creator at some point.
Father Joris flashed a grin, turned, and re-entered his home, closing the door solidly behind him. Aramis was left shaking his head. Nice talking to you too, Father. With Lewis and Aaron performing separate tasks on his behalf, Aramis hurried over to the manor to see Lord Avedon. He was met at the entrance of the manor by Blake Weathertop.
Failing in your duties again, brother of Aaron?
Aramis refused to take the butler's bait. Good morning, Blake. Please escort me to the Grand Hall, and let Lord Avedon know I am here to see him. The butler opened his mouth for a retort, but cut himself short. He instead turned on his heel and walked across the foyer towards the Grand Hall. Aramis followed. Once they entered the hall, Aramis moved to take a seat at the circular table that took up much of the center of the room. He noted that no guard was stationed in the room, but Aramis did see one guard on the second floor balcony. Bringing his focus back to the butler, Aramis saw that Blake was already on his way towards an exit on the far side of the room. Blake.
Yes?
Before informing Lord Avedon, please stop by the kitchens and let them know I would like some breakfast. Thank you. Aramis smiled at the short that escaped from the butler before he turned and walked away. As Aramis was finishing the breakfast Chef Roland had brought out to him, Richard and Karen Avedon, separately defining sternness and mischievousness, entered the Grand Hall. Richard spoke before Aramis could rise to greet them.
So I understand Miss Gloria was killed during the night. Clearly your success at discovering our family's secrets has not helped you find Greta's killer.
Karen playfully smacked her brother on the arm.
Stop it, Richard. Sir Aramis has done well, already discovering who attacked our dear brother.
She kept her voice low to ensure the balcony guard could not hear her.
It's only a matter of time before he finds out who has committed these murders, and then we can bring Edward back.
Richard turned an eye towards the guard, who did not appear to be listening.
Hush, Karen.
He faced a now standing Aramis.
Father is distraught over the death of Gloria Platt, as you might imagine. He knew Gloria all of his life. He does not want to see you. He is watching over Edward right now.
I have to ask the question, Richard. You are sure your guest did not escape his restraints last night? Both Avedon shook their head in unison, and Karen answered.
It is impossible, Sir Aramis. I slept in the room for the first half of the night, and then Richard took over. Edward never stirred during my watch.
And I can assure you that the only feeding Edward did last night was just before dawn. He came out of his stupor long enough to eat some venison. After that, I gave him another draft. He's been out since.
Aramis kept his voice low as well.
Has Marissa delivered the King's Crown potion?
Richard rolled his eyes.
Later this morning, if she keeps her promise.
Aramis moved in close, grasped Richard's right arm, and shifted his eyes from one Avedon to the other.
Speaking of promises, I need one from you. Do not let your father use the potion on Edward until I have returned. We are close now, and once the killer is found, we will know for sure if Edward has tasted human blood. Please.
He hasn't. I know it.
You also know what will happen if you are wrong, Richard. If you want to protect the rest of your family, especially John and Julienne, do not use the potion until I return.
Richard didn't say a word. Karen stepped between the two men.
I promise, Sir Aramis.
Aramis smiled. Thank you, my lady. He stepped back, bowed, and then turned to walk out of the room. He called out behind him in a louder voice. We are close. I will be back soon. Aramis was more than halfway back to the inn when he heard Louis shouting behind him.
Sir Aramis, wait!
The head constable wore a wide smile on his face.
That is the look of finally being able to contribute to the investigation. You found something in the tunnels.
Louis breathed heavily, nearly exhausted from running.
Yes, yes, you're going to want to see this.
A short time later, the two men were standing in an alcove off one of the main tunnels. Aramis had tried to draw a map as they had walked, but he had to admit that he was lost.
Where are we?
Louis had a puzzled look on his face, so Aramis added, What is above us?
Ah, we're near the bakery. This tunnel leads to one of the original shelters I told you about. The Hemming family has direct access to that shelter from their home.
Louis moved to a corner of the alcove.
I didn't move it, but I recognized it right away.
In the corner beyond Lewis's outstretched hand were two crates, so old that they had crumbled in upon themselves. But in doing so, they had created a small gap at ground level, a gap now filled with a tall, bound tome.
Greta's journal.
This particular tunnel has seen some recent use, obviously. I already took the liberty of speaking to Hemming, surprising Dally when I knocked on the door to their shelter from the other side. She got up and got Hemming from the bakery, and Hemming confirmed he uses this shelter for the storage of supplies during winter, so he's been down here several times over the last month. Each year he sweeps the tunnels connecting this shelter to the alcove, which is consistent with the condition of the tunnels in this immediate area.
What about his daughter?
Louis raised an eyebrow.
What do you mean?
You said you surprised Hemming's wife, Dally. Was Jilly there?
No, she wasn't. I assumed she was at the bakery at this time of the morning.
Yes, of course.
Aramis opened his notebook and looked at his notes on Jilly Hemming.
Jilly, who has shown signs of emotional distress in the past, including when I first spoke to her about her father. Jilly, who has been discovered burning dolls in the woods outside of town. Jilly, who was found crying in the courtyard just a few days before Greta's murder. Jilly, who might have considered Greta more than a friend.
Aramis retrieved a small piece of paper from between two pages of his notebook, the partial page that had been ripped from Greta's journal. He squatted, studying the crates and the book lodged between them. Nothing seemed out of sorts. Aramis gently extracted the book from its resting place. Louis held his torch above the monk's shoulder, providing Aramis enough light to read. It was a large journal, at least three hands high and two across. Yet the book was light, due mainly to the thin paper used in its creation. Aramis searched for the page that would match the puzzle piece in his other hand. It turned out to be an impossible task.
Look here, Louis.
The first half of the book had pages filled with text. But after the last written page, several pages of the journal were missing.
A good number of pages were ripped out at this point. Our killer must have thought something within the journal incriminated him or her. But the book itself was too large to carry into town. It was just too recognizable.
So we still have no idea who H.A. is.
Aramis nodded. H.A. were the letters written on the torn piece in Aramis's hand. Letters that were tied to a person that Greta might have had an appointment with the night of her murder.
Where are the rest of your people?
Still searching the tunnels on the eastern side of town.
Aramis began scanning the rest of the journal looking for any references to H.A. There were none, but there were references to several townspeople, using initials, that Greta had difficulties with at one time or another. The monk took mental notes, not wishing to write his thoughts down in front of Louis. Though the journal provided no direct link to Greta's killer, it answered a question almost as important to Aramis Cragen.
cross-referencing initials and abbreviations previously found in the Platt accounting books, patterns began to appear as Aramis turned the pages of Greta's journal. His experience as an interpreter of prophecy served him well in this regard. Letters and numbers that were meant to be code transformed themselves into a language that Aramis could comprehend. Once those building blocks fell into place, the journal's secrets became a historical record of Greta's work. Most important to Aramis were several references to work being performed by Marissa on Greta's behalf, and this work was tied to deliveries made to certain visitors, again using initials that had no reference point for him. But in conjunction with these deliveries came the largest payments to the Avedons. As he read to himself, Lewis spoke to him from behind.
I have to hand it to you, Sir Aramis. It only took you a few days to discover most of Avedon Hill's secrets.
While Aramis did not sense danger, he was at a definite disadvantage with Lewis hovering over him with a lit torch.
I have learned much, Lewis, but I still do not understand what it is that the Avedons and Platts have that is able to generate the income listed in the Platt ledgers.
Lewis walked around and pulled Aramis to his feet.
I am part of this. I've been paid handsomely to keep the peace, but even more to keep visitors from ever wanting to stay in Avedon Hill. Like you said, there is something here that the Avedons and Platts have used for generations to fill their coffers with gold. I don't know what it is, but I've seen enough to know that whatever it is, it isn't good, Sir Aramis. Some of the people that I've had to attend to, that Talik had to serve at his inn, these aren't the sort of folks that you'd invite over for an evening meal, if you get my meaning.
Aramis had many questions, but at that moment, his mind went back to Talik and Rondellus Marx. Talik was part of this, though, was he not?
I believe so, and I think that's why he was always so frustrated. You've seen the ledgers. I believe this is the real reason I was asked to stop investigating Greta's murder.
Why would Lord Avedon allow me access?
He remembered Lord Avedon's words.
This could work.
Come again, sir.
You're outsiders. You could do this.
I do not believe that Lord Avedon will ever allow you to leave Avedon Hill, Sir Aramis. That's why I sent the rest of the men to the eastern tunnels. I wanted you to know that you need to escape while you can. The tunnels from the inn can get you outside of town. It appears Lord Avedon doesn't even know the extent of his family's network of mines. Escape with Aaron and don't come back. I have enough information here to continue the investigation. I'll discover who committed these murders, and I promise I won't stop with that. I'll discover what it is that the Avedons have sold to these agents and mercenaries I've seen here year after year.
Aramis's mind was leaping from one thought to the next, barely hearing Lewis's words.
Talik's plea to Rondellus.
But there are reasons why your tests have failed.
And the glow rocks that Rondellus had in the bag, lightless.
Reasons why your tests have failed.
When glow rocks are exposed to sunlight, they lose their glow. Tax.
Rondellus had said it.
I have heard the rumors from one of my former masters in Inara. I have seen the ruins of the old walls and tax, and you told me exactly what I wanted to hear.
The city walls of Tax, breached nearly 30 years ago by an unexplained explosion, damaged 10 times as powerful as the largest rock ever hurled by a trebuchet. An explosion that had marked the beginning of an attack that had left over 1,000 dead. An attack that had initially been linked to you.
Gareth.
Several weeks before the attack on the city of Tax, Aramis's best friend Gareth Beckwin had been murdered in one of the only historical examples of an assassination of an Aranic advisor. Several explosions outside of a heavily populated public building had caused chaos within. In the confusion, an assassin ended the life of Gareth Beckwin with a poisoned blade, an attack initially linked to Grosh. A third voice called out from the corner of the room.
So, now you know why I am here.
Aramis blinked. Lewis was still focused on him. Aramis looked past Lewis at Gareth Beckwin, who sat on one of the crates. Wood that would have collapsed under the weight, if Gareth had been real. Gareth held a finger in front of his mouth.
Don't speak. We wouldn't want the good constable to question your sanity.
Gareth stood.
How many mysterious incidents does this explain? How many claims of magic are now disproved?
He shook his head.
You'd better listen to the good constable and escape while you can.
Aramis?
Lewis's question brought Aramis's focus back. He looked over once more to the crates, but Gareth was gone. Aramis placed his hand squarely on Lewis's shoulders.
Thank you, Lewis. I appreciate everything you are saying. The only problem is, I made a promise to Gloria Platt that I would return Greta's body to its proper resting place and discover who murdered her. I cannot fail her, especially now. Besides, I think I just figured it all out. Lewis brightened.
What?
It is the glow rocks. It's...
Aramis stopped, realizing that Lewis deserved to hear everything.
Listen, that is not important. There's something I need to tell you about Edvard.
At that moment, Richard, Constable Ulrich, and several men Aramis had not met rounded a nearby corner of the tunnel and approached.
Head Constable, Ulrich told my father that you found Greta's journal. Lord Avedon requests your presence immediately, along with the book.
Lewis ignored Richard for the moment, keeping his eyes on Aramis.
What is it?
Aramis had no idea if Richard had overheard any of their discussion, but the look on Richard's face told Aramis that his conversation with Lewis was over. Richard Avedon pushed past the head constable to stand between Lewis and the monk.
Now, head constable. Sir Aramis, is there anything else you need here?
Aramis shook his head. I am fine. I can make my way back to the inn, thank you.
I am sure once Lord Avedon takes a look at Greta's journal, you will be permitted to examine it as long as you like.
Aramis did not allow his expression to change.
Thank you, Richard.
Lewis kept his eyes locked on Aramis, hoping for something. He mouthed the word later and walked through the alcove towards the Hemmings' basement. Aramis hoped someone from the Hemming family would grant him egress from the tunnels.
I must get to the inn to meet Aaron, but I have one more stop to make.
So I'm sure most of you have heard of Anansi, or Coyote, or even both of them. Tricksters, you know what I mean? Anthropomorphic representations of their specific culture's fears made manifest through oral storytelling traditions, right? Are you with me? Well, what you might not have known, and what isn't in any of the textbooks, is that Coyote and Anansi actually met up and formed a partnership in Toronto, Canada. What happened next? Only the end of the world. Again. Watch for Lost Gods, a new dark urban fantasy by Drew Beattie, the author of White Trashland, coming in the fall of 2008. For more information, visit www.lostgods.ca or www.drewbeattie.com. Remember, they'll only stay lost if you don't find them.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. First, I want to thank some very special listeners. 2 weeks ago, I put out the call for audio editors, and four wonderful people answered the call. For the remainder of the podcast novel, I'll be relying on these guys to edit my raw audio. I'll still be doing all the mixing and layering in of the music and sound effects and the guest voices, but the work of these producers will help me make it to the finish line. And just who are these great people? Paula Jackson, Stuart Boyles, Charles Blanchard, and Scott Roche. I'll have more information on the website about these assistant producers in the next few days. Again, guys, thank you for your help. Next, I'd like to mention the contest we've got going on over at the podcast website. In the last 2 weeks, I've had more iTunes reviews than emails to qualify for the contest. So remember, once you leave a review on iTunes, rate Murder at Avedon Hill over at patiobooks.com or leave a voicemail on the Cairn line, write me an email so I can enter you into the contest. Entries will be accepted until December 20th, and I'll hold another live drawing on my Stick'em page on December 21st. The goal is to get to 100 reviews on iTunes. We're at almost 70 now, so if you're enjoying the podcast novel, please head on over to iTunes and leave a review. Next, I'd like to plug a couple of podcasts that I appeared on this past week. First, I was interviewed on Geek Cred by Steve Rickenberg, and that's over at geekcred.net. I had a great time, and we talked about 45 minutes about the novel, about gaming, about geek life, and I think you'd enjoy it. So head on over to geekcred.net and check that out. Last week, I also made my second appearance on the Dead Robot Society podcast. This time I was on their episode talking about the fantasy genre. It was a great discussion and I had fun giving the guys a hard time about some of their previous episodes. It's a great listen, so head on over to deadrobotsociety.com and give that episode a listen. And now for a couple of Karen Line calls. And the Karen Line is at 704-315-5884. Use the Karen line to leave a message, to ask me a question, and you can send me an email as well at pgholyfield@murderatavidonhill.com. Send me a question, and I'll be happy to read that on the air. So we have our first caller here, and it's an anonymous caller.
Hey, PG. I'm just letting you know that I love your story. And I can't wait to hear the end of it. I am in suspense week to week, just waiting to hear what's next. And just keep up the good work. And I'm going straight to the website or iTunes, and I'm going to leave you a nice comment. So keep up, like I said, the good work. Bye.
Thank you very much for your call. And next time, leave your name. Now we have our second call, and this will be an anonymous caller as well.
Hi, I just wanted to express how much I love Murder at Avedon Hill. and has anyone ever told you you have a really soothing voice? Anyway, maybe that's weird, but I thought I'd say that. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you very much. There is a reason that I read bedtime stories to my two-year-old. Now for our last caller. And yes, it's an anonymous caller.
Hey, PG, I just wanted to let you know that I love the podcast and that I can't wait to get the new episodes in my feed. Keep up the good work, and I can't wait to hear how the show ends. Thanks.
Okay, guys, well, that's it for this week. Thanks once again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Right, the windshield. Look, Finchie's happy to pay for that. Hell, I'll even pay for it. We'll both pay for it. How much do you want? Okay, is this one of those things where you say blood and I say $100 and we wind up meeting in the middle, you know, at like 500? Guess not.
Coming soon from theshawnakee.com.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this podcast and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through magnatune.com, Kevin McLeod through incompetech.com, and David Beard through davidbeardmusic.com. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave a review at iTunes and on patiobooks.com. And become part of the show by leaving a message on the Karen line at 704-315-5884.
This podcast is copyright 2007-2008 PG Holyfield and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.5 U.S. license.